Well, normally, brethren, when I speak, I only have a short amount of time. You know, it's a sermonette. Not a lot of time. But today, I have lots of time. So sit back. And don't go to sleep on me, though. Because I'm going to talk on a subject that perks your ears. Love. The subject of love. So now that I have your attention and lots of time, let's look into what love is and what love is not today. I'd like for you to take your Bibles. Let's turn over to the book of Corinthians, 1 Corinthians. Very famous chapter in the Bible. But we're not going to start reading in verse 1. We're going to start reading verse 4. It says, love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself, is not puffed up, does not behave rudely, does not seek its own, is not provoked, thinks no evil, does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. You know, most wedding ceremonies contain many of the words in 1 Corinthians 13. And just a few weeks, we'll probably be hearing some of those words at the wedding that will be taking place here in our church. But it's known as the love chapter, isn't it? 1 Corinthians 13. You know, the words are very beautiful in the entire chapter there. But they're also very sobering, too. Because they tell us what love is, and they show us how far we fall short of showing love, because it tells us what love is not. So let's go back up and start at verse 1 of chapter 13, and we'll begin reading there. It says, though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but I don't have love, I have become as sounding brass or clanging cymbals. Very irritating, it's not very pleasing just to hear that crashing sound. And though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so that I could remove mountains, that's a tremendous amount of faith, but that I don't have love, I am nothing. And though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, it's a good thing. Many people in the world do that. Nothing wrong with that. And though I give my body to be burned, a sacrifice, and I have not love, it profits me nothing. You know, those are very powerful words when you read those and you think and meditate on what is just said there. You know, if I had a gift, one of these gifts, they're called gifts, if I had one of those gifts that I would pick out, you know, and you think, wow, faith. If I had enough faith to move a mountain, that would be tremendous if we all could do that. Or if I had faith to know all mysteries, knowledge to know all mysteries. You know, Paul says none of it profits us nothing if we don't have love. So how important is having love, brethren? How important is it? Well, I think we can find if we read, we're not going to read the whole chapter, but we go to the end of the chapter, it tells us how important it is. It says, and now abide faith, hope, love, these three. But the greatest of these is love. The greatest one is love. You know, if I were to be able to pick one of those, I would probably said faith. You know, faith is very important to our beliefs. We have to have faith. But it says love is the one. This is the most important. Well, the Bible tells us that love is actually commanded by God. It's a command of God that we have love and show love. Let's take our Bibles and go back to the book of Matthew. Matthew 22. Matthew 22, And let's read verse 36. Actually, let's go up to 35 and back up one. It says, "Then one of them, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him and saying, 'Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law?' Jesus said to him, 'You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like it: you shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commands hang all the law and the prophets.'" Well, we know, brethren, that the first four commandments of the Ten Commandments are towards love towards God. That is what God commands us to do, to love him. And the last six are towards our neighbor, mankind. That's what the last six are for. You know, I know it's been on our minds, but this past week we've heard of many stories that happened in Aurora, Colorado, haven't we? Mr. Peterson mentioned it briefly there. But I want to read you something that was, and many of you have probably seen it on the Facebooks, you've seen it in the news, you've read it, but I want to read it to you here today. It says, "Three survivors of the Colorado movie theater massacre escaped with minor wounds, but were left with broken hearts because their heroic boyfriends died saving them. In final acts of valor, John Blunk, Matt McQuinn, and Alex Teves used their bodies to shield their girlfriends as accused madman James Holmes turned the Aurora Cinemaplex into a shooting gallery. Blunk's girlfriend, Jason Young, McQuinn's girlfriend, Samantha Yoler, and Teves' girlfriend, Amanda Lingard, made it out of the massacre alive. But they would have been killed had it not been for the loves of their lives. He's a hero, and he'll never be forgotten. A tearful Jason Young told the Daily News, 'John took a bullet for me.' Jason's mother said, 'He was loving, the kind of guy you want your daughter to be with. And ultimately, she's alive because of this, because he protected her.' Jason Young, 21, said Blunk took her to see Friday's midnight premiere of The Dark Knight Rises to celebrate her graduation from veterinarian school. And as the black-clad killer burst into the theater and unleashed tear gas and torrent discriminating gunfire, Blunk selflessly protected his girlfriend. He pushed Jason on the ground and under her seat. Then he threw his body on top of her," his mother said. "He was 6'2", an incredible shape he was, which is why he was able to push her under the seats. He pushed her down on the floor and laid down on top of her, and he died there." You know, very sad, very tragic thing that happened. John 15:13 tells us, "Greater love has no one than to lay down his life for his friends." You know, there were many other stories this week concerning the sad, sad situation that happened in Colorado. But there was true love there for these men. Let's go back, though, to 1 Corinthians 13. Let's go back there and read in detail what is being said here. Let's look and see what love really is. Let's begin in verse 4. It says, "Love suffers long." What does that mean, love suffers long? It means love will endure. No matter what the circumstances are, love will endure. It's not quick to anger. Love doesn't anger quickly. Love suffers being provoked by the evil from others. You know, in Luke 23:34, when Christ was put on the cross, it says, Christ said, "Then Jesus said, 'Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do,' as he was hanging from the cross, and the Roman soldiers were down below casting lots for his garments." They could care less that he was up there dying. Yet Christ could have called a legion of angels and struck them dead. He could have put them out in a moment. But no, he didn't do that. He said, "Forgive them, for they know not what they do." Love suffers long. Love is kind is the next one. In verse 4, it says, love is kind. You know, love is not rough. It's not harsh. It seeks to do good to others. The purpose of love is to seek the welfare of the one loved. You care about that person or persons, and you look out for their welfare. And you have outgoing concern for them. You know, Mr. Armstrong used to always give the definition of love as outgoing concern for others. That was what he said it was. You know, I looked it up. I didn't really find that in the definitions of love, but Mr. Armstrong had it right. It's outgoing concern for others. The next one, love does not envy. It rejoices in the success of others. It rejoices in the success of others. In real love, we are not envious of those who appear to, let's say, get a better break in life than maybe you're having in life. You should not be envious of those people. You should be happy for them. You know, Mr. Haefeli mentioned in his sermon last week, didn't he? Cain was envious of his brother Abel's offering, which led him eventually to kill his own brother. That's what envy can do. Love does not envy. You know, we see in 1 Samuel 18, let's turn there and read that. 1 Samuel 18. A story I know we've all read many times, but 1 Samuel 18, verse 9, we're going to read. Here, taking up the story where Saul, he was so eat up with envy for young David, someone he had loved, but he was so eat up with envy that he wanted to kill David. Look what it says here, beginning in verse 7 of chapter 18. So the woman sang as they were danced and said, Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. Then Saul was very angry and saying, the saying displeased him, and he said, they have ascribed to David 10,000s, and to me they have ascribed but 1,000s. Now what more can he have but the kingdom? What are they going to do? He's going to have the kingdom next. You know, he's going to take over. So Saul eyed David from that day forward. And it happened on the next day, the distressing spirit from God came upon Saul, and he prophesied inside the house. So David, who was there, played music with his hand and at the other times, but there was a spear in Saul's hand this time. And Saul cast the spear, for he said, I will pin David to the wall with it. He wanted to kill David, someone he loved, over envy. But David escaped in his presence. You know, brethren, love. Well, let's go to the next point. You know, envy is very, very, very dangerous, and love does not show that. But in the next one, love does not parade itself. What does that mean? It does not parade itself. That means that love doesn't put itself in the spotlight. You're not put in the spotlight. It does not boast or brag about its own accomplishments. It is anonymous. No one knows what you did. It was quietly done without seeking recognition. You know, it doesn't parade itself. It doesn't want to be in the spotlight. It doesn't want, hey, look what I did. Hey, look what I've done, or this or that, or seeking recognition. No. It's done very quietly, the things you do. That's what love is. It doesn't parade itself. The next one. It's not puffed up. Puffed up. People have exaggerated opinions of their own importance and often feel that their happiness is the most important thing in life, and it's easy for them to forget the feelings and needs of others. There's a scripture in the Bible, I don't have it here, but it says when you're rich and increased with goods, you have need of nothing. Well, that's what people are when they're puffed up. They have need of nothing. They're the only ones important. They don't care about other people's feelings or the needs of others. You know, you've heard of the saying, proud as a peacock. Maybe some of you have never heard of that saying, proud as a peacock, but having a very high opinion of oneself, filled with excessive esteem. This saying refers to the peacock because with its colorful tail that can be expanded like a fan, it has long been symbolized as vanity and pride because the way a peacock will strut around with its fan spread out. Look at me. Look how beautiful I am. You know, love doesn't behave rudely. The next one. What does that mean? Love does not behave rudely. You know, when we're rude to someone, we are being disrespectful to them, aren't we? We're being disrespectful to them. We're not showing love. We knew before we said something to them that it would hurt them, but we did it anyway. Being verbally abusive is one way of behaving rudely when we verbally say things to other people. It can hurt them. The next one, love doesn't seek its own. In today's time, we might say it this way. He has his own self-interest in mind, and he takes care of number one. That's all he's concerned with. Similar to one of the other one I just went through. The next one, love thinks no evil. Love doesn't think evil. Have you ever noticed in life that people will give a big benefit of the doubt to others that they like? Even though they may do a lot of wrong things, but they really like them, they just kind of overlook that. But someone that they don't really like, they don't care for, they can find every fault in the world with that person. And it may be the same faults this other person has. You know, they always think the worst of them. I say they keep a running tally, and they don't forget all those things. Well, I remember back when he said that to me, and, you know, that was really offensive, and I remember when he did all these things to me, and he does this, and he does that, and he does all these things, and you just keep that running tally because you really don't care for that person, but you keep adding up all the things you can think about this person. But then someone else could have those same things that you like and get along with, but that's okay. You know, you kind of overlook. You overlook it. You know, my wife, I've mentioned this, I think, before, but my wife's sister and brother. Well, my wife's sister does not get along with her mother, and they never really have for many, many years. But my wife's brother gets along with the mother. They have a good relation. And no matter what my wife would say to her mother about her sister, because they get along fine, no matter what she says, the mother always imputes evil. Oh, well, she's only doing that because she's showing off. Oh, she's only doing this because she wants to be seen. Oh, she's only doing this for... It's never a good motive. It's always an evil motive. Yet, if the brother did the same thing, her brother did the same thing, she would be positive. Oh, that's because, you know, he's doing real good. And yeah, everything is positive no matter what it is about the brother. But for my wife's sister, it's always a negative evil. Love does not do that. Love doesn't do that. There's an example of that in the Bible I want to just turn to and look at. Turn over to the book of Job. If I can find it here. Job chapter 1. Here we see an example of imputing evil in someone's mind. It says in verse 6, "Now there was a day when the sons of God," and those are angels, "came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came among them." Here comes Satan coming along, joining in. "And the Lord said to Satan, 'From where do you come?' So Satan answered the Lord and said, 'Well, I've been going to and fro on the earth and from walking back and forth on it.' Then the Lord said," this is one of the few conversations between Satan and the Lord recorded too. "And the Lord said to Satan, 'Have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless man, an upright man who fears God and shuns evil?' Here God is saying good things about Job. And how he's a righteous man. But Satan is trying to impute evil in God's mind here. He's going to try and tempt once again. And in verse 9 it says, "So Satan answered the Lord and said, 'Does Job fear God for nothing? Does he really fear you for nothing? You know, you've made a hedge around him, haven't you, God? Around his household, around all that he has on every side. You have blessed the work of his hands and his possessions and increased in the land. But now stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, and he will surely curse you to your face.'" You know, here Satan is trying to convince God, well, he's only good because you give him all this stuff. That's the only reason he's good. You take it away from him, he's going to curse you. And now we go down to read verse 12. "So the Lord said to Satan, 'Behold, all that he has is in your power now. Only do not lay a hand on his person.' And Satan went out from the presence of the Lord." So Satan kind of got what he wanted. He wanted to go ahead and do what he said Job would do. He was going to test Job, so to speak. And he did. And he went out and he took all every possession, everything away from Job. And Job never cursed God. Satan was wrong. But he tried to impute an evil motive in God's mind. Say, well, he's just this way because of this. You give him everything and all the blessings and things. You know, love doesn't try to impute motives. The next one, back to 1 Corinthians 13. "Love does not rejoice in iniquity." Love rejoices in the truth, doesn't it? "Iniquity is sin. Love does not rejoice in sin." It can't. It can't abide there. Look over at Psalms 10, chapter 10. Should have told you to stay near the Job. Psalms 10. Here, starting in verse 2, it says, "The wicked in his pride persecutes the poor. Let them be caught in the plots which they have devised, for the wicked boast of his heart's desire. He blesses the greedy and renounces the Lord. The wicked in his proud countenance does not seek God. God is none of his thoughts." God is not in his thoughts at all. "His ways are always prospering. Your judgments are far above out of his sight. As for all his enemies, he sneers at them. He has said in his heart, 'I shall not be moved. I shall never be in adversity.' His mouth is full of cursing and deceit and oppression. Under his tongue is trouble and iniquity. He sits in the lurking places of the villages, and in the secret places he murders the innocent. His eyes are secretly fixed on the helpless. He lies in wait secretly as a lion in his den and lies to wait to catch the poor." And we could go on and read all these. It goes on and on. But you can see that love does not have iniquity. Love does not rejoice in it. You know, it would sure be hard to love people like this I've just read, wouldn't it? It would be hard to love someone like this. Yet Christ says we're to love our enemies. But it would be very difficult, a person that was this evil that would do this many things, to show love. But yet Christ tells us that we are to love our enemies. Not what they do, not the things they do. You know, it's difficult to show love to someone who doesn't show it back to you, isn't it? You ever know people like that? You try to love them, be kind to them, and do things, and they just kind of reject you, and they don't return the kindness and love and some of these things that we've gone through in the book of 1 Corinthians 13. They don't respond. They don't respond. There's a lot of information about love in 1 Corinthians 13. And you know, and the irony of it all is that some Christians in this world believe that the commandments have been done away. They believe they've been done away. They've been nailed to the cross. And they are not required to keep those, what they call, harsh laws, as they call them, the commandments. Instead, they say, all you need is love. Kind of like the old Beatle, John Lennon, I think he sang it, song, all you need is love. Well, is that true or not? Yes, love is the most important, but is that all you need? You know, they act as though love is easy. Love's not easy. These things that we have to do in 1 Corinthians 13, they're not easy. They're very difficult to do sometimes as human beings. You know, that the commandments are difficult, but they're missing, what they're missing is that the commandments are all about love. They show you how to love. If the commandments were kept, there wouldn't have been a Colorado massacre, would there? There wouldn't have been one. Finally, brethren, let's turn over to the book of John, 1 John. 1 John. First John 4, beginning in verse 7, it says, Beloved, let us love one another, for God is of love. For love is of God. Same thing. And everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. He who does not love does not know God, for God is love. In this, the love of God was manifest toward us, that God has sent his only begotten Son into the world that he might live, that we might live through him. In this is love, not that we love God, but that he loved us and sent his Son to be the propitiation for our sins. Beloved, if God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. And final thing, brethren, love never fails.